Minutes. It's the Great Music Debate with our hosts, Beener and Weevil. Now, here's Beener and Weevil.
Again.
Hello, he's Beener.
And
Weevil.
He is Weevil. He is Weevil.
Weevil, welcome
back.
He's
not
back.
Undercover Steve, by
happy,
the way.
Happy friggin'
today.
New Year.
Happy New Year.
We haven't said that yet to each other.
That's how long
really.
It's been.
Yeah.
Happy New Year, 2011.
Thanksgiving was the last holiday we celebrated
yes,
together on the show.
I can't believe it.
I can't.
Because I have talked to you since then.
Yes, we have
so
talked.
So it seems silly to
yes.
say... Happy New Year right now.
But silly is my bag.
That is your bag.
Yes.
Got your name written all over that bag.
Hello. Wait, Niho. I think that's Chinese for because we have a lot of listeners.
Shouldn't you say it in Egyptian?
You know what? Just that's an oversight on my point. I wanted to look up various ways of saying hello in different languages. Maybe I'll do that right now.
Shout out to Egypt. I thought it'd be good to do it in Egyptian.
I'm not going near Egypt. I don't know about you.
Okay. What do you mean?
Good luck touch over the subject? There, man. Yeah, well, it's scary.
Well, it was scary here when there was a revolution, too.
Yeah, I missed that one.
Me, too. We got to do the good part, the easy part. Anywho, let's not get political.
Yes.
Only because I love your topic for today.
Yes, yes.
Your one topic that you named is got me kind of jazzed. Would you like to tell us what it is?
Okay. I was going to try and look up hello in many different languages. I'll do that in a little
look
bit.
Look for goodbye.
Aloha.
You can do it at the end.
Aloha. Well, a while ago I had said, you know, I've been kind of thinking a lot about some of the songs that made definitive, that I can pinpoint certain songs in my life in the time that it was, that they had a dramatic effect on either what I wanted to do musically or how I did things musically.
Yes, and I like this topic.
Yes, and I threw that at you as homework, which you have yelled at me often on here. You
like
make me do homework.
I don't like the homework part.
But, well, you feverishly took to this one, and I thought that
was
very cool.
You know, because I think that's such a great thing. I think that a lot of people, a lot of musicians, I'm directing this at musicians, but a lot of musicians have moments in songs, I think, that change your playing and your writing.
You hear something and...
Yeah, and it just it just might send you off in a direction from that moment forward or opens your eyes to something. And it is usually a song, a moment, not
yes.
a band necessarily, you know, but it usually is like a moment. And I mean, do you have one to start with? Because I have one.
I figure we'd start with you.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm opening up the floor to you.
I have one. For me.
All right. But before you get to that, I just want to say, while I was standing outside before, because I've had all these other things that I told you, these other subplots that I thought we could play with maybe later.
Subplots.
But if we do a back end of this, like a part duh, so to speak,
blah.
I figure, obviously, as we were talking before, I would say the most dramatic musical influence that's happened to me in recent years that has really kind of, would be the right word.
Influenced?
Not so much influenced, but I guess...
Made
really,
profound change?
Yeah, like I've just been very preoccupied with this particular genre, and I'd say it's been the most dramatic change for me musically, and
I
you
know
brought
where
that
you're
up.
Going.
And then that's the fact
you're
that I've
Miley
got
Miley Cyrus influence.
No, I'm not Miley Cyrus.
It's coming close.
But just, yeah, the effect that I've gotten very, very... intrigued by female artists.
Not just female artists.
Yeah.
It's not like we're talking Ann Wilson from Heart or
well,
we're talking...
I mean, those go back a long time.
You're
like
talking about...
There's been a new crop
Kelly
of
Kelly Clarkson.
It. Yes.
And you name some of the others.
Particularly Kay Hanley from Letters to Cleo.
Right.
Huge, huge, huge influence in the last 15 years for me. And now, more recently, a lot of the Riot Girl stuff, like the Bikini Kills and the... Slater Kinney stuff, and I mean the Dolly Rots was the other really huge, huge impact musically on me, which we were just goofing with a little bit ago.
I know when you're doing your show, pretending that you're Undercover Steve, that you play a lot.
I am Undercover Steve. It's not an act.
You play a lot of that stuff.
I'm a Gemini. You know, I do have more than one personality.
You play. I'm really shocked by it because honest to God, since I don't know it well, it sounds like Miley Cyrus.
Help.
And I'm really, I'm just thrown that this, that you like this. It's like as if you just moved to Connecticut.
I've been basically,
and started playing golf.
I came out
wearing those plaid pants. Like I just can't. I don't. Where? Who is this?
It is
who
the effect you? Coming from my Slayer, Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath, Rush
right.
background.
There, you put it in context.
I basically have come out as a girl rock guy.
You've come out. That's what
I've
I'm
come out.
About.
It's the only. It's the most apt description of it. It took a long time for me to reach this place, this comfortable place.
But how in the world has this happened? Do you know that what you're
I know
listening
how
to
it's happened.
Sounds like Miley Cyrus?
Well, no.
On Disney Channel? Isn't she on Disney Channel?
I'm just going to skip that.
Whatever she's on.
It's funny because I've spent a lot of time exploring this thought process very recently, and I've been itching to do my show about it on PIBCO1.com Friday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I've been wanting to do something, but it's so hard for me to really delve into a topic like this by myself because I feel really pretentious or self-absorbed. It's better when I have, like, you know, my partner.
Well, plus you're Weevil now. You're not even Undercover Steve.
But
so
these
you're
are
whole
the type
different
of things,
person completely.
These are the type of things that I think I make a much more rounded case for, you know, what my thought process when I'm actually talking with someone as opposed to me just sitting by myself and then I see something shiny, I get distracted and
oh, look at
I
the shiny thing.
Yeah.
That's a nickel.
That's nice. That's cool. But
so,
but
well,
we can get into that in a little while.
That is a big, strange. But can you point? Can you bring that down to a moment in a song, which is the topic?
No,
just
I can't.
Curious.
I can't put it down to one moment. There's a series.
Well, you did say that there was a moment. Well, you said it on your. You said the other guy's show. That other guy.
Yeah.
What's the other guy?
Undercover Steve.
Yeah, that guy.
Undercover Uncle Steve.
You said that guy said that. That you would, well, it wasn't a moment, but it was several moments where you were coming out of that relationship and you were waking up in the middle of the night to Letters of Cleo.
That was a moment. Yeah, that was a huge moment. And when I went after that song, it was the very beginning of it.
Because I think you would need a profound relationship breakup to have this profound...
Well, that was a good hour and a half of the show last night.
But I'm just amazed that this snuck through the iron.
Yeah.
The steel curtain, as it were. Not to bring up a bitter subject.
I'll put it in a very simple, completely objectified way, very thin way of putting it. It's just, I really like girls.
Oh.
And I think being
That's not it.
That I'm not around them enough, that's where I'm making up the difference.
That's not it.
Well, no,
if that was it,
if
would have happened a long time ago.
If you want to talk about it,
why all
while,
of a sudden is this softer, more... It's the thing you supposedly hate the most. This commercialized kind of.
If you
can, you play one. Can you play one of them so we can, so
we could
people listening would know what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
if you want to hijack the direction we were originally going to go.
No, I don't want to hijack the direction. I just want to make a point.
Because I can explain all these things you're asking, but it's not going to be a quick explanation. So that's why I wonder if you really want to start on this can of worms. Now
I might want to get back to it
on this can of girls. Now,
I just want the listener, whoever the listener might be, and apparently could be in Egypt.
Wrong.
Since we get a lot of international.
We have gotten a lot of Middle East downloads recently.
So I want the person who's listening to understand what I'm referring to when I say this Miley Cyrus sounding stuff.
Sure,
because that might be a really.
Do you want me to get
the subjective
there
viewpoint?
There should be a great song on the. On that zip, that flash drive.
Okay,
I just
would
gave
you like?
It.
Shall I pause?
Pause. We'll set up a song.
Pause.
Okay.
Okay, so I loaded your song and it's about to start.
Okay.
Okay, perfect.
Last night.
Wait, let me listen to this. Now, first of all, let's just get out of the way. It's the remake of Melanie's song.
Yes.
Right, a brand new pair of roller skates.
Like you're avoiding me.
Nice.
I'm okay alone, but you've got something I need. Well, I can't hit that on the one.
Dude, I'm convinced you use some helium for that one.
Dude, that her voice.
Okay, listen. Everybody, world. Everyone, listen to this for a second. How far is this from Miley Cyrus?
Anyway, I think somebody it's a lot farther. It's a lot heavier.
Well, I don't listen to Miley Cyrus, so I can't tell you for sure. But I'm saying the feel of it, the quality.
Wait,
not the quality.
Right here. This drummer, Amy Wood. If this is exactly how I would play this song drum-wise, I can't think of one thing she does that I would change.
But it's new sounding. It's Blink 182 sounding,
yeah,
which is not
new.
It's
pop punk.
Yeah.
But listen to her voice. Listen to her voice.
I like it. Well, I don't love it. I like. Who is this?
This is the Dolly Rocks.
I like a little bit of the Letters to Cleo that you often play.
Oh, you want a Cupid doll.
But this sounds like say I was watching a show on the WB 11.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they went to a club.
Well, they were on Greek.
Playing.
They were on Greek.
Okay, there you go.
That was a family
so,
channel.
So, you know, they go to a club and then this is playing.
Wait, the heavy part's coming. I love her voice.
This is so not you.
I love the
this is so
I love that this, cute, but it's got an aggressive
and
edge
the music,
to it. Yeah.
With the digital sounding, yeah. Like everything. That new sound, which I have a hard time understanding why it sounds
but here,
just
Amy,
a digital sound.
Amy Wood just rocks this part. Right here.
I'm not saying this is bad. It's just... does it not sound like Green Day with a girl singer?
With a really cute-voiced, punky girl.
But I'm not saying it's bad. But how did this get to be you? How in the world did you ever get...
Do you want to do a completely different show?
No, okay. Well, no, the show was moments that changed. So did that moment open this door for you and then you no longer saw this as the enemy? Because this used to be the enemy to you.
Well, then we got to go back to Letters to Cleo.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
All right, how about I do one and then we'll come back? Give me a Letters to Cleo at some point along the way.
All right.
Because that must be the source of this
craziness.
Well,
I think we should do the musical influences first because this came so much later after my development.
Okay. I'll buy that. And it's over. Okay.
I love that song.
All right,
that's a great cover. Nobody could nail that song like Kelly can. I've heard a number of people sing that song. Nobody can touch it with that cute, cutey doll voice. But not only... It appeals to the cute side as well, which all guys like young girls. I mean, let's not be stupid.
No, but that's not...
But it's also, she's got an edge to her that it's a great pop punky edge.
It's an edge that you usually reject flat out.
I know.
It's the kind of edge that Linkin Park has.
I've changed. No.
Linkin Park. You know what I said?
No.
That's the kind of edge it has.
Girls are allowed to be cute. Guys
shouldn't
be like
that. No, but it's not
like
cute. It's a new sounding edge. Like that guitar sound is everybody's guitar sound now. I've
been explaining to you why I like it, and you keep telling me no.
No,
it's
no,
not
I'm
not my
saying
style.
No.
It never was. Never was, but I've opened up to some of this.
I guess you're proving the point of the show, which is moments that change. This one's radical. Are we going to see you... What next? Three-piece suit?
No.
Is that coming next?
I don't think so.
Is Corporate Steve
not unless
coming?
Somebody we know dies, then you might.
If Corporate Steve shows up here, I'm really going to have to sit down.
I think you're in no fear of Corporate Steve.
Oh, I'm sorry. Weevil. I'm calling you Steve. I don't even know who that is.
Riot Girl Weevil is here to stay.
All right. I need more time with this, obviously.
I can explain all of
it.
This in a rather in-depth conversation.
All right. No, we'll get to it.
With great music illustrated, done primarily by very aggressive or assertive rocking women, because women can really rock. They used to try to market them in a particular way, and it's changed a lot. Girls have really stood up for themselves musically and I mean, there
Are
was
you
such
sure
a,
you're not a promoter?
There
no.
was such an anomaly from where we came from. You had very few isolated cases of it, and more often than not, they were mostly guided the way the industry wanted them to be packaged. And then you had a backlash on that big time from the 90s into the new millennium of girls that said, you know what? We can rock just as much as you guys can, and we're cute and hot when we do it, which is win-win to me.
I get your point. I just,
it's so foreign to
you. We're going to have to go back to this. Like, you know, when you go to dinner and they bring the bread, and you're starving, you start eating the bread, and then sometimes they keep the bread there and you keep going back to it. That's what this is. This is bread on the table. We're going to have to keep going back.
We're
going
to have to
take more bites because I still don't get it.
I'm going to do a best of of all your analogies one of these days.
Thank you, because they're horrible. They're trying to make some book.
They are, you know, it reminds me of that Lebowski line, Donnie, you're like a small child that wanders in the middle of a big movie.
Like, I don't know the movie, but I'm sure it's an awful
big
analogy.
Big Lebowski's
like
the most, one of the most
amazing
movies.
I know, it's
movie.
A huge
don't
cult movie, and I haven't seen it. I am drinking bean, and it's not yours. No thanks to you.
Cheating on me.
That's all right.
I'm drinking my own homemade bean because you didn't bring any.
I brought some. I
and
have
I'm
it
making
right,
a substitute,
right,
a cheesy
right
substitute.
Right in my culo, right over there.
Well, I don't have it in my cuppo right here.
You didn't
even
notice that I just said ass in Spanish.
It
it's right
matter.
In my cooler.
It doesn't matter. We haven't been downloaded in Spain much. Or
yes, we have. Portugal,
oh, we have?
Spain,
well, then I'm sorry.
South America.
I should have been more aware.
You see, now you just totally played right
okay,
into my hands.
Okay, can we go on to the next thing?
You just played right into my hands.
No, we're supposed to have what? We're supposed to go on to this influence
Sin
of
Dao is how to say hello.
Sin Dao!
Sin Dao is Vietnamese. The Thai people, it's Li Ho.
What is? What are you
hello.
Saying?
I'm saying hello to some of these countries
right.
that download.
All right, so then do that, and I'll wait.
Yeah, well,
I'll drink coffee while you say hello to the world.
What song are you going to?
Well, you stick your head out the window
first.
Of the plane and say hello to the world. Go ahead.
You got to see the Scottish one. How's it going?
Get out of here.
Howzitgaun.
No.
How's it going?
Get out of here. All right. All that's right. it. Done.
Let's go.
Cut.
Moving right along. What song were you going to perform?
I would like to speak about Hit Me With Your
Beaner has the floor.
Well, as you had said, these are moments in songs that change your playing, or I would like to think, not just change your playing, but change your thinking, your writing, your singing, your, like they alter your feeling about. And before I even say this one, the song I want you to bring up is, and I know you have it, I can load it in, right?
Yeah.
It's in here. It's Hit Me With Your Best Shot,
yes.
Pat Benatar. There's a moment in that song, which to me is just an all-time moment. And
bass-wise, you're talking?
No, I'm talking guitar-wise.
Oh, guitar-wise.
No, I'm
all
not
right,
a
I'm
guitar
sorry.
Player.
Me, you know, you're a bass player
I know, I'm bass
primarily.
Player, but but I play a little guitar.
I assumed.
But it's not just the playing. It's like
okay.
when you write a song, you envision the guitar. So sometimes even if I can't play it, somebody will come in and play it, but I still have the vision for what it should
yeah,
sound like.
Yeah, you have the pattern in your
and
head.
And this,
kinda.
The solo in Hit Me With Your Best Shot, to me, it's not complicated. It's not some great, you know, effort work, and it's not any, you know, lesson on playing, but the it's so energizing and exciting. It jumps out at you. The first time I ever heard it, I was like, oh, what did he just do? What is that? I gotta hear it again. And every time I hear it, I stop wherever I am and I listen for that solo. And I have to air guitar that solo wherever I am. I don't care what I'm doing, because it's such a great, great solo. Like many Van Halen solos, which of course, if I pick Van Halen, we could sit here all afternoon and I'll just pick solo after solo that make me want to drop everything and try to play guitar.
Okay.
But this one I picked because it comes out of nowhere.
See,
like Neil Gerardo is a surprise to me. You don't see this coming when you first hear the first time you ever heard the song. You don't know this is coming. You don't know the guitar player is going to kick your ass in a second, you know? So that's how it hits me.
Before it gets away from us, that thing you said about, you know, it makes you wish you could play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
I never got that from Eddie Van Halen. I mean, I really love some of his stuff. There's a few things, but they're more rhythm oriented.
I don't care what it is, rhythm or solo.
But guitar solo-wise, the people that really make me wish I could play guitar solo is, oddly enough, Ace Frehley does some unbelievably tasty solos.
Good thing I am sitting down, I need to sit more comfortably in my chair. I almost fell out of it.
The guy from Riot does a solo that I just, goddamn, I wish I could play guitar for it. There's a couple of people like that.
I'm surprised Ace Frehley.
Yeah,
not that
you know,
Ace is bad
because
or
that was,
I'm not saying it's bad.
Dude,
I've been
carrying around that game plan from a while ago because you said, you know, one of these days you got to show me what it is that you like so much about Kiss.
I like Kiss.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. In fact, I can think of a lot of great riffs from Kiss.
You said something to that effect to me the one day about,
I probably said it about Ace.
Oh, about Ace. Yes, you did
because
about Ace.
I don't
you're
going
to have to show
Ace.
Me like, what it is you like so much about Ace.
Yes.
And I think
yes,
Ace
because you said he's like a really good guitar
player.
He does
not get the credit that he deserves in a lot
of
regards.
That's what you had said, something to that effect. And I was like, really? I think he's kind of overrated.
I've been carrying that idea in my pocket for a long time, but this idea jumped out at me more.
All right, we might have to we might sidebar on that. We need to touch on that. That's bread on the table.
I'll touch it. Okay. But let's kick
it. All right, so can we play that?
Yeah.
All right, so I should stop and load it in. I should.
Anything you want. You have the board.
I don't do that. It's not my show, like somebody I know. I actually share it. All right, hold on 1 second.
It was your show. You broke up with me.
Let's. Not right here.
Now I'm like the other woman show.
All right, let's let's load it in.
Okay.
Okay, we all were about to. I loaded it in. We just have to wait a second. And here it comes.
My friend Steve from Drop Card is going to love this. He worships Neil Giraldo.
And before I even...
Is it Geraldo or Giraldo?
I think it's Gerardo.
Gerardo.
And before I even talk about how awesome the song is, which is coming up after this chorus, I cut into the song. So just one verse, one chorus. The guitar sound is friggin' amazing. Now listen, right here. That solo where it comes out. I just want to hear it again and again. Yeah. Good night, Irene. That's a solo. To me, if I'm a guitar player, I want to do that every time. Solo, but I want to kill a song the way that does.
It is, you know, he's got incredible technique. It's a great ripping, well done. I don't have to show you every trick I could do solo, but I can shape notes.
And it comes in like the song is a pop song.
Yeah.
The song is like, you know, a goofy pop song. Hit me with your best shot. It's kind of like, it's a tough chick song going back to your kind of thing. Pat Benatar must factor into your
But she's not
discussion.
Grandfathered in.
Okay, forget that for now. I don't want to eat the bread right now.
Well, the only thing I will say is I wasn't a big fan of Pat Benatar. I just wasn't musically. It was a little more AOR for me at that time.
Right.
The stuff that we're talking about now is definitely, most of it is not big time commercial hit stuff.
Right.
I'll
and
say
she,
that
and
much.
She was.
Except
you know,
for the Kelly
time.
Clarkson.
I'm not going to touch that yet because you just blew your whole thing when you said Kelly Clarkson.
I never said I'm not a complicated man full of contradictions.
Okay. Now that song, it's you know, it's a tough chick. You know, it's Pat Benatar.
It's a tough cookie.
But try to remember also when you first heard it, when it was like, oh, pretty cool. You know, I mean, she had her thing for a while on MTV and all
that. Yeah, she was huge.
But you're listening to a pop song, and then he comes out with that guitar, and I don't know, those first little opening that... that is just so ripping. It's just
it
so
is.
Kick-ass. And then the whole solo, I love a solo where all the bars of the solo seem like a mini little statement.
Sure.
And that one is a statement. And, you know, Eddie Van Halen does it all the time. Like, Eddie Van Halen starts out with, you know, like pulling regular notes. Then he goes to the hammer-ons. Then he goes to, you know, some of the whammy bar. And then he finishes with that fan picking.
Ties it up.
And like, that's his little voice. That's his little
signature,
song.
I think is a good way of putting
Neil Giraldo's signature is doing those, like it's not even great playing. It's kind of like, I could picture him recording it.
It is great playing because there's something to be said.
It's Joe Perry great playing.
Well,
it's not technically great.
Well, no, it is. It's just simple.
Well, and but it's not. It's not even musically, I'm not even sure it's musically correct, so to speak. Like, that first part that he plays that...
Yeah. But
what's great about that is
neat.
It sounds like...
It's clean.
It's just so fast and chopped up and articulated that it just sounds like, whoa, what was that? that was this great solo happening in this kind of, like, pop nothing song.
To me, those are style points, which is gold. That is the diamond in the ore that you've been digging for forever.
I agree.
Anybody can learn technique. That's the Yngwie factor. Yngwie can play everything and everywhere, and Steve Vai. But I'm not interested. I'm a lot more interested in a more basic guitar player. That those notes, you could tell that there's a lot of heart into where those notes lay and how they shape, how they're phrased, and they're done like Greg Lake. Greg Lake is not the most, you know, he's not going to be the fastest or the most complicated guitar player in the world. But those leads he does in Carnival 9. Are flawless, smooth like ivory. They're
Right.
They're perfect for what they are.
And it's also a person stretching to their capacity at that moment. You know what I mean? So they're probably, he probably outreached himself at that moment. He was like, oh, I got something great. You know, like, and it just, that awesome, the whole solo has, you know, like fast riffs in it, which were probably about at his limit of playing. It has like he that first opening where he's like, and he flips it into open notes, which makes like a little bit of a chord, which is a great sound.
You might want to put that cup down, dude. I'm watching it perk up in the air out of your cup.
I'm making points and spilling coffee all over myself. Coffee it doesn't matter. It's that important.
It is the most volatile fluid on the planet. You can look at it and it'll perk and spill on you.
Well,
so you might want to put it
without
down.
Me drinking it first.
All right, so go on.
So, you know, I could probably go on forever about the solo, but the thing is it I don't know if it changed my way of thinking, but it tapped into something I feel.
It made you aware.
No, it tapped. It made I related to it. Like I want to do that. When I hear a solo, I just wish that, like, I could probably sit down and come up with something myself. I would have to like work it out piece by piece, or just take a chance and try to play it. But that raw energy of it. There's a raw risk taking energy in that solo that. To this day, whenever I hear that Neil Gerardo is going to do a solo, like if I know I'm listening I'm waiting for, like if he's going to, if I heard a new Pat Benatar song, I would tune in immediately to say, what's he going to do? Because he's got me forever with that. So that solo just kicks butt. Not to mention some of the other solos he has too in that time frame.
Well, what I meant by aware is basically you were, you know, like you listened to 100 guitar leads and then you heard that one and all of a sudden, something right in front of you that you never acknowledged, you just became aware of. Like, much like I knew I loved music, and then I got Rush Hemispheres, and that was when I became aware of the different, of like the bass is doing this, the drums are doing this, and I want to play that. You know, I became more, you know, like when Eve bit, you know, I call those the apple moment. When Eve bit the apple, and all of a sudden, oh wow! You know, now you know you're aware of things.
I know what you're saying. This, I can't say this is one of those moments for me because Eddie Van Halen owns those moments for me in guitar.
But you just had another one with that.
No, but it's not so much.
No,
you know,
not one.
It's not a new awareness. It's that it's somebody like Neil Gerardo doing it in a song like that with his capacity. Like Eddie Van Halen is Eddie Van Halen. And the music of Van Halen, it makes room for that.
Did you take away a different concept of guitar playing from Neil Gerardo than you have from those hundreds of Van Halen?
Well, no, because I think there's actually a similar thing going on there, except if Eddie played that solo,
it would be totally different.
Well, it would be different, but I'm just saying, if he played the same kind of solo, if he just happened to come up with the same kind of solo, but I'm just saying, if he did, he would have articulated the notes even better.
It would have been a lot more complicated.
There are lost moments for Neil Gerardo where there's like sketchiness.
I don't think so.
Well, there is. In my opinion.
I think that's there for a reason.
I think it's because he's playing at his capacity.
Yeah.
Eddie would be playing at a much higher level, and therefore it wouldn't be as lost.
So you would not appreciate the simpler, raw, rougher
guitar. Oh, I totally
guitar.
Do. That's
well,
the whole
That's
point.
What I'm saying. You just became aware of a different approach
Maybe.
To a lead.
If you're talking about the approach of sort of
because you can't compare
a
that
lesser
to Eddie.
Talented person just stretching their own limits. That's what I hear.
I wouldn't even say lesser talented. I'd say lesser
able.
Less, just different technique.
There is such a thing as the ability to move around on the guitar neck. Some people are a little bit more able. Like
that's more technique.
Steve Vai, nobody moves around the neck better than Steve Vai in terms of being able to.
He's got much better technique.
But either of us could barely name a solo or a moment from him. I mean, I can think of some of David Lee Roth's
solo
stuff.
That's my point.
It's pretty good, but it's not magical moments for me.
Yeah, there would be nothing to be aware of. There's no revelation in that for us because we're not impressed, or at least I'm not impressed by...
It's the rawness, too, though.
Of technique being the concentration. I'm more impressed by what you articulate and what you shape. I mean, if it works hand-in-hand with having great technique, fine. But you just showed me a lesser technique and a better lead than anything friggin' Yngwie has done pretty much 90% of his
career. I agree with that, too. For my ear, probably for yours, too. And to me, too. I'd rather hear... I'd rather, if I wrote a song, I'd rather bring Neil Gerardo in to do the solo than Steve Vai.
Absolutely.
Honesty, any day, any day.
But Steve Vai is a better guitar player, technically.
Oh, forget it. I mean, if you bring in Steve Vai, it would be like, oh, you're bringing in a master.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. But if you wanted, like, if I wrote a pop song, like a just a regular kind of rock song, I would be just excited beyond belief of what Neil Gerardo could do on it, as opposed to Steve Vai.
With a much more style point as opposed to technique factor. So that
absolutely, and also I would rather hear Neil Gerardo test. I would rather hear Neil Gerardo push his limited ability rather than hear Steve Vai maximize.
I don't like the word limited. I don't like that there.
But
he's not limited at all.
What I'm implying is Steve Vai is a better guitar player, but than Neil Gerardo by like 100 times.
Better technique.
Yeah.
He's not a better guitar player to me, because I think Neil Gerardo's stuff is more interesting, and that's what you're looking
to accomplish. Let me change the instrument to see if I can make the same point. I would rather hear Freddie Mercury sing something than Celine Dion.
Sure.
Let me pick a male singer rather than
Paul Rodgers.
Well,
because he's been singing Queen
thank
stuff.
You. That's a good. That's actually that's a good. Way. That's a perfect example. I'd rather hear Freddie Mercury than Paul Rodgers. Who's a better singer, technically?
Yes,
Paul Rodgers. But I'd rather hear.
I guess that's debatable.
I think Paul Rodgers is technically better than Freddie Mercury. Freddie Mercury has a lot of flaws in his voice.
Christina Aguilera is a better singer, maybe, than Kelly Clarkson, but I definitely like Kelly Clarkson's voice a lot better.
That's a good example. That's what I'm talking about.
I don't need to hear... That was one of the things that really annoyed me about the anthem, is I don't need a Patti LaBelle impression. Patti LaBelle's the only one that's allowed to go around the range like that.
The Super Bowl and...
Yeah, the national anthem.
Just for the listener.
I think everybody knows that Christina Aguilera screwed it up.
Well, just for a time's sake, we just...
But that's not even my problem.
The Super Bowl with the Steelers and the Green Bay Packers.
I'm not aware of such a game, but I did hear there was a song
before
it.
You don't want to talk about that game, Mr. Steelers.
I'm aware of a song before the game started, this game you speak of.
Look, you know, I could go on forever myself about that. I think it was a bastardization. It was a horrible nightmare.
Just sing that song the way, I mean, it deserves the respect it's earned. But
exactly.
But she does.
Bigger than you are.
She does the Patti LaBelle syndrome, which... Patti LaBelle is the only one that's allowed to put 17 different scales in a 4-bar note, and we'll let her do it because she's amazing. But I don't need to hear Christina Aguilera have to show that she can hit every note in the range to sing the Star Spangled Banner.
Me neither. And something about that is similar to what we're talking about.
Yes.
In the sense that. But that's the point I was trying to make.
Less
that I
is
think
more.
You're rejecting an idea. I think you're rejecting the idea that one person is technically more able than the other.
No,
you're rejecting that
idea?
I'm
not. I just don't call it more talented.
Maybe it's not the right word.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I will.
To me, that is more talented.
For the basis of our show, which is supposed to be a debate, I will argue that point.
Okay.
That I will not consider, like, you know, I know guitar players, like two different guitar players play for the same band. I won't mention names. When the guitar player I really like because of his style quit, and they got another guy that could play better technique and could do more stuff, I found his stuff, the first guy's stuff, better stuff to listen to. I liked it more because of the style points. So to me, that was... He wrote better stuff as opposed to Mr. Noti, Noti, Noti that just did more complicated and intricate stuff, but I don't think it suited the music as well as the other stylish stuff.
And in that vein, what you just said, we're talking about the same thing.
Absolutely.
I mean, who's the king...
For about an hour
in our
now.
Book, who's one of the great kings of style points for a guitar player?
Alex Liveson.
Okay, Alex Liveson. I was going to say Joe Perry. Because Joe Perry's really weak technically in terms of... Is he sloppy? Yeah. Can he repeat the same things live? Seems like he can't. You know, he's very sloppy. But he, time after time, his solos that I will never forget.
He is just a guitar player.
He's
like,
just soul.
That's all style and heart and character.
I agree.
Which is, to me, is worth 10 Yngwies.
I agree.
You know, which
and
is
that's
why,
actually why, the point. I guess we are making the same point.
Yeah,
I just thought you were saying... That
I just didn't like how you were rapping it, how you were phrasing it.
You didn't like
it.
That I say that Eddie Van Halen's 100 times more talented.
Yeah.
Maybe talented is not a good
technique.
Word to use.
Yeah, he's definitely got a lot more technique. But
he's more skilled.
I mean, he's also an anomaly that his stuff is... I think he's the good balance. He doesn't Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, yeah. I was
he
just going to say, let's not write him off as just technical.
Yeah, he doesn't always have to do everything in that one lead.
No, I mean, he is the...
Women and Children First stuff, you know. There's stuff like that. It's just little things, little shapes and phrases and, you know.
He's never been anything other than somebody who knew what to play and where to play it to serve the song.
Eruption was probably the only... The license I'll give him for being... like gratuitous about
his
talent.
Well, the whole first record, he's a bit gratuitous. He's flying all over the neck.
He's kicking the door
on purpose.
Open.
Yeah,
showing off.
But do you ever feel when you listen to Van Halen like, oh, he's overplaying?
No,
I mean, I just don't feel that way with Van Halen because it's part of his soul, and he knows when to use simple little phrases
Absolutely.
And notes, and he just feels it in his. Oh, with Eddie Van Halen, to me, it always seems right. Whatever he does,
the coolest thing Eddie Van Halen ever did. Is in the Hot for Teacher video when he knocks the books off the table with the guitar head right in time. I thought that was perfect.
I like to think he had better moments, but okay.
I was just being stupid.
All right, so that's one of my moments.
We should go on to another thing.
Yeah, that was one of the ones I couldn't I couldn't get off it, but that was a good one.
I have something that is not on that flash drive.
Yes,
of
sir.
A guitar lead.
Check.
That I would like to illustrate the same point redundantly for you because it's one of my favorite guitar leads on the planet, and it's so not complicated. You could tell it's a guy just bashing it out.
Right.
And I think it really complements what you just did with Neil's.
Do I have to load it in?
Yeah, I have to get it for you, so we will have to pause.
Let's pause. There's your song.
Now, I love the harmonics and the what I call finger squeaks and all this. This is probably one of my top five guitar leads of all time, to me. Just because of style, right here. Listen. Joe Perry-ish.
It is, and it's very
totally.
Sloppy, like Joe Perry-ish.
Yeah, but
raunchy.
To me, brilliant.
And also, I like the way it's panned over in the right channel.
Yeah.
It's funny, because the other guitar that's in the left channel, I thought that was the solo you were talking about. Right, because it's a riff.
Yeah.
So who is it? I don't even know who this is.
This is Riot.
Oh.
They did pretty well in the late 70s into the early 80s, and then they faded into a lot of different lineups. But this singer is one of my favorite singers, because he's more of a mid-range power singer, and just good solid drummer, great right here. Sure, a million guys can play better than him,
right?
But that sounded fucking great.
And it's I like that too, the rawness of it.
Yeah.
Again, it's the same thing that I hear in the Neil Giraudo solo. It's that reaching past. It's a person at their edge. It's like, you know when somebody sings and they're at their edge of the range and
Bono.
You hear that grittiness like Bono. He's always at the edge of his range. And that's such a great... I love that stretch. And that's what that sounded like to me. Like,
and that's why I took issue with the phrasing you wrapped it in with the, you know, talent. I find more talent in that guitar
talent,
lead.
I use the word talent differently. I used it like skill.
Okay, technique.
Technique.
Like the way
but
I use
skill
technique.
And technique grow together. But you just made me think of something I forgot. There's another thing about that solo which I like, and I can't bring in every song that does this right now, but it's one of my favorite things. It did open my mind in a lot of ways. When people play a solo over a choppy part,
And the
notes bend a lot over choppy rhythm.
Yep.
Sort of
like what we just heard.
Like what we just heard, or one of my favorite solos of all time, the solo that's in Magic Man in Heart.
Yeah, that's a great lead. Yeah.
That solo's just because it does that bends notes over breaks, like stops in the music, like staccato type of music. And also another solo it's like that is
That's Craft.
Train Kept a Rolling.
Yeah.
The studio portion of that song before it sounds live, the slower version. Perry is just bending and holding notes across this. And he's just holding these notes. It's so awesome. Yeah, I would agree with you. That's my kind of solo.
That's craft and style over technique, which anybody can learn technique if you're somewhat proficient. But having that soul, that style, that you know, that's the intangible that... Only few people have, you know, one out of every, you know, however many thousand will have that. Otherwise, everybody would be great.
It's also moments too. It's not always there for somebody. Somebody might have it and then it's gone.
Hey, it's fleeting.
Like, you know, here it is fleeting.
Time
That's what's
is
so great
fleeting.
About it. It's kind of fleeting.
Madness.
Its
toll. I remember.
All right, you just blew your levels out. Do you have? Is that it for that one? Because I have another one.
No, yeah, that's it. That's it.
Okay, I got something here. I'm pulling out something different here. We got the bass plugged in.
I do a hernia having test. A cough? Sorry, I had to check that hernia thing.
You turned the wrong way.
Forgive me.
I'm going to play something for you. Let's see if I got anything here. Okay, ready?
That's a bass.
I'm going to show you a lot in this one thing, or at least hopefully you'll get my entire point out of this. I'm just going to play something, and then I would make my point about moments that change how you play.
Okay.
Ready?
Well, how did that change you?
Well, I'll play the rest of the song.
So close. I can't get it. Now I got it. Message in a bottle.
Okay, that. I'm going to tell you why that. That moment changed my playing.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Because. First of all, I had a lot. You know my history of, you know, starting out as playing guitar and then hearing
playing
Getty,
bass on guitar.
Yeah, hearing Geddy Lee play bass, and then all of a sudden deciding, oh, I got to play bass and all that junk. But for a long time, I had that. What a lot of bass players have, and I think a lot of people still have. You have ideas in your head about how it should be done, and I thought you can't play with anything other than your fingers a bass. It has to be, you know, with the fingers, like Geddy would. Geddy would never play with a pick. And if anybody ever said he did.
Steve Harris would not play with a pick.
Exactly. And when I was younger, the idea that someone would play a pick, I don't even know how I got over the fact that Chris Squire only played with a pick.
There's the contradiction.
I think I just ignored that. I know. I just kind of always would put that aside, like, no, that's not
true.
You
know what? He's the exception to that rule. We'll let him get away with it.
Exactly. Like, for some reason, that was okay.
I'll let that one go.
Exactly. He had to let it go. Chris Squire was so great. He said, well, I don't understand it, but he does it. But when Sting did that, which is, by the way, of course, Message in a Bottle.
Message.
Sting did that. First of all, Sting comes out onto the scene, and it's clear that he's a good bass player.
You make me want to play something.
He's a notable bass player. His bass notes are worthy of remembering. They're like the guitar solos we talked about. When I hear Sting play certain things he plays, I don't forget them like this song. Oh, I'm sorry, I played it wrong. But forget it.
I think
Bed's Too Big Without You.
All
right, whatever he plays,
I
remember them all. Like
you're playing it wrong. It's like I think you're. I don't know. It sounds weird for me.
Well, anyway, regardless of that,
I think it's just a time.
The point. The one I played for you. What I heard there is how, first of all, it was so cool that the part, like, it almost dies in the song. It's under the chorus, and the chorus is kind of melodic. Message in a bottle. But he's going. It stops and dies, and I just love that staccato little thing he's doing in there. Plus, he's doing it under his vocal. So he's singing and playing at the same time. It's against the vocal, so it's a real challenge to do. Because I used to do it live, and it was a challenge to play those two together, you know, and sing them. And here's the thing. That wouldn't be the same to me without a pick. And I feel like I've lost you.
I was sending you something. I'm listening because I have a point to add to that.
All right, so the
multi.
The pick sound in that is so important. I started, once I played that song, I did it with my trio, I started playing that song and singing it, I started playing with a pick. Not permanently, but I did a new thing that I would never do before that, which is now I play with a pick when it's called for.
Now
and that song calls for it.
Now I'm just from right now. Is that McCartney-esque almost?
Well, that was going to be part two. The part two is McCartney. How do you get around that? Sometimes McCartney plays with his fingers, but you can't get around.
Play with a pick.
You can't get around.
Now, what were you playing for me earlier?
I was playing that a little wrong, but that's
you
silly
threw
love
some
songs.
Wings at me. Oh, okay. Well, you threw me some other wings early when I came in.
Wings. I don't remember what I did. But, you know, that's... He swings around the bass in the most fluid fashion, playing with a pick, and he opened my mind to something else, and that was actually going to be a separate one. But that changed my playing because... Not only was it now okay to play with a pick, but it was important to get... There's a sound there.
There's a hard edge to it, I guess.
There's an attack.
Yeah.
There's an attack you can't get with your fingers. And yeah, that click, that... I hear the pick. I hear the plastic, you know, clicking. And to me, that's so important to that song. And there's such a feel to it. It changes my whole feel. And now it's important to me to play songs that call for it. With a pick. And I, you know, this is not something that should help Egypt to be free. This is not really important.
Yeah, this may have no bearing on it.
It may not. But the thing is, when you talk about things that change your playing, like that moment with Sting, it changed my playing. Well, forever, I'll always want to hear that when it's necessary to hear that, because it should be there when it's called for, that pick sound.
Yeah, it has its place.
I have the antithesis of that.
Hello?
Now?
Who's
Ant? What happened? I have the antithesis of that. Okay. As well, which I'll get to
yes.
in one of my next ones.
Depending on what the application calls
so
for.
That was definitely a moment for
but,
me.
But... what I love about this show is I've had about five different plans for how the show was going to lay out between leaving my house this morning. And it's like, and that's what I love about the organic flow of what we're doing with this show, to pat myself and you on the back, is how, just like in real life, when you start talking about music, the conversation can go in any different which way depending on, you know, the factors. And you made me think about something that also had, you know, a definite impact on me musically is a song that recently came to my attention thanks to Diane and KC on that other show.
Right.
That I do.
Right.
But I just sent it to you, and I want to throw it in, and we can talk about it while it plays.
All right, let's load that in.
Load that in.
We're back, and it's back, and it's here.
This is at Strontium 90, which is the Police before the Police, when they had the other guitar player singer dude.
See? Yeah, because they were a four-piece, right?
Yeah.
Sounds like Stuart Copeland.
I never, when we first started seeing him play, I never saw somebody do so much with the hi-hat the way he does.
Yeah, it's like
with that. And this is actually correcting something I said in my other show. I referred to it as match grip. It's not traditional. Match grip is when you play straight. But to see somebody as, you know, just that diverse with the traditional grip was a whole new thing to me. And then what I came to learn in time with him, not so much with this stuff, this is like straight ahead hard rock.
Right.
But a lot of the songs, it seems he switches the beat to where it's like what I would normally play on the ride, he's doing on the bass drum.
Right.
And what I would normally do on the bass drum, he's doing on the ride.
Like, well, he puts the bass drums on the twos and the fours,
yes,
which is reggae.
Yes.
That's what that's that whole reggae feel. Instead of it, where the snare is, that's yeah, where the bass drum ends.
And
up.
His ride will be doing the quarter notes or eighth notes or 16th notes. Bass drum will be,
And also what you said about using the hi-hat, he uses the hi-hat like somebody uses their voice.
Yeah.
It's all kinds of dynamic shifting and shaping and, like... His whole playing is like that. His whole playing is like this flow of creativity.
But that big, big uniqueness to me, a lot of that is like where he'll be doing, like, on his bass drum, he'll be going... Meanwhile, his ride is going... Ding, 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 ding,
like an accent rather than a driving force.
My instinct would be to play it as in, like... I'd be going and my bass drum would be doing the boom ba boom ba boom ba boom ba boom ba boom.
Right, your accents are coming.
He switches the constant for me.
Now this is a song you probably never heard before, but the band I'm talking about is Dire Straits and Mark Knopfler.
Okay.
Here's a guitar player who plays without a pick, so it's kind of the reverse. This would be an opening a door, the idea of playing without a pick on regular guitar. Now this, listen to that.
Derek Trucks does that.
Listen to that right there. There's a softness to the attack.
Yeah.
That he always gets. And, you know, I could have pulled a bunch of Dire Straits out, but this is one I had that he keeps returning to that riff, and it's just a great, great feel. It's a great example of his kind of feel. It's a soft kind of not that distorted sound. It's a I think it's a Fender sound he's always had.
Yeah, he always uses Strat pretty much, doesn't he?
Hear that. Listen to that. That's totally Mark Knopfler.
I am such a Gibson guy.
His bending and pulling and that not distorted sound, it's like
jazz.
Clean. Yeah, it's like a jazzy
jazz.
Sound.
They were always a jazzy
that
style band.
That changed my thinking about guitar. This, you know, Dire Straits did. Just because that kind of soft, I don't know, it's like he's getting the most out of the actual wood of the guitar.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been done since the beginning of time. But I heard it a lot when he did it. Right there, listen.
That's been his signature. You listen back to all of
I think that's beautiful.
It's just a shame that he went on to do some stuff that I really, really abhor.
But the early records,
it's just beautiful guitar.
I mean,
work.
I could have brought Espresso Love or a bunch of songs.
Sultan's.
Like, Sultan's a Swing or.
Which I love his guitar playing in that, and I love the drumming in that. It's jazz.
Lady Rider.
But then we start getting into it's like that Steely Dan.
Yeah, but you know how much I like Steely Dan.
Well, that's jazz.
And maybe it is.
It's a jazz style and feel. This is like a blues jazz mix guitar in that regard, because blues can be fingery.
It's so simple.
It's just got the soft,
but
edge.
Can you hear that there's no pick there?
Yeah, there's no attack.
It's such a soft attack. It's
his
fingers.
The notes come on, you know, soft, rounded.
Yeah. And then he's always, you know, pulling a note where he does that, you know, standard, like he pulls up the note and then... Bam,
he also plays really clean.
Very clean.
Yeah.
Which I love.
I only like that in certain cases, very few.
I'm going to bring this down just because I want to make a point, you know, not that I can't play it, but the idea is this is playing, you know, playing with your fingers.
Yeah.
And then that... Like that kind of... He's always bending everything.
But you know what just occurred to me? I almost think that... Tilbrook achieves almost that same feel with a pick.
Yeah, and you can. You can go with a soft
attack. The lead
attack.
For Another Nail in My Heart, that...
But that's definitely pick.
Is he? Yeah, he plays pick, but it almost has that feel to it to me.
Yeah, because there's anything with a soft, sweet...
He's a brilliant
attack.
Guitar player.
He really is a brilliant guitar. Very underrated. He also will change your thinking. He changed my thinking vocally, which I was going to get to.
That was a big influence.
But
I remember that.
But that Mark Knopfler doing his soft attack, that
yeah.
And I'm playing with a pick, of course, because it's, I don't know if I could do it the other way. But that kind of like his whole feel was clean. And it almost, the distortion comes just from how hard he hits.
Yeah.
Rather than distortion in pedal or overdrive.
His overdrive would be from the amp.
And so anyway, that's a moment for me, for him. It's a collective moment. I guess it comes out and it starts with Sultan's a Swing, but I'm just so terribly sick of that song. But that's a moment for me right there. A change.
All right.
A difference.
Can we play a song can we finally get to my drums maybe on this one? I have a particular song in there that I think had one of my...
You could have brought drums.
I could have brought drums.
And you know, but you didn't.
Yeah. You carry those drums down my glacier-like driveway to my car.
I know, and you get the glacier when you get here, too.
I know that bass drum's going to collapse when I fall on it. So we'll wait till the thaw.
All right, so I'm plugging in something? Or
yes,
it's
we
in
are.
In there already or no?
It's on my floopy
drive.
All
right, hold on 1 second. Let's load it in.
All right.
I have loaded it in.
It's coming.
It's coming. We're waiting. See, I told you it would take a while.
That's all right.
Stand here looking at each other.
Nah, actually, I'm sitting. I'm looking at our graph of downloads.
Are you checking it? Wait, break. And okay, here it is. Here's the song you are talking about. And that is the song.
Is that an old favorite or what?
I enjoy
this.
It's
like
this.
Going home, dude. This song is like going home. That did, right there.
If that doesn't work, that was play
one,
drums.
That's the one big thing in this song that really...
You're talking about the drum fill.
Yeah.
Because you air drummed it.
This, the particular beat.
Off the toms.
Yep. Wait, and then here. Like all these little neat hi-hat snappy things, and particularly that intro double bass roll. And the alternating floor, you know, the tom to snare beat. All that stuff. I'd never heard anybody really do anything like that
yet.
Me
either.
Yeah.
And when you hear this, like to me, if I'm a drummer, I can't think of something more fun than playing this song.
It took me a long time to learn how to play this song. And I made it a mission to when I was first starting to play.
And these, of course, are typical, like, you know, that's typical Rush cymbal
right
catches. That's too good.
Like he does these cute like late, they're like lazy shots right here. To me, that's like a late.
Yeah, you know it's funny.
Wait,
if you're...
so great. This song had such a huge impact, and the I guess you'd call it the bridge part coming up. It took me a long time to learn how to do that snap hi-hat on the measure like that. I guess it's on the quarter notes or this whole thing. The crossover snare roll to snap.
So clean.
Flam.
Could the drums sound better? I just love that sound.
Yeah. But the hardest thing at that, my youthful drumming was playing that next part.
It's also a great moment for Alex.
Cymbal grabs.
Yeah, that's like a Rush standard. And back then it was new.
I love this open hi-hat.
Simple. And this beat. It's like all of a sudden it's a recall to the first record almost.
Took me. I mean, Hemisphere has obviously made the biggest impact on me, made me want to become a drummer. But this actually made me like, how the hell does he do that?
Right, and I was just going to say, if you think about this song, if you don't have Neil doing the creative things he's doing, this song could have been so different. The riff could have been, could just be typical, in a way.
Would have been kind of a boring, almost punk song.
Well, I mean, it just would have been, listen to that, the delay on there.
But this album, you know, learning those hi-hat snaps and playing them on like the quarter notes like that.
That song to me, you know, and I wasn't thinking of that one. I don't think, you know, I wouldn't say my moments about how they changed my drumming because I'm not a drummer.
You're not a drummer.
But there are moments where you think to yourself, like, that to me makes me think about drums. Like that song, that's how I would want to play if I was a drummer. I'd want to. That's what I'd want to do with a song.
Cause
it's such a challenge. It's so cool. Like in that song, I pretty much listen for the drum parts besides the song itself.
Makes that song.
And Alex's guitar playing in that is pretty
For me, that whole song, the drums really make that song. Cause
totally.
it was a weird array of concepts drumming wise that were all new to me. Cause everybody had been playing like different types of 4/4s and, you know, 5/4 or 7/8, things like that. But they kind of went along the number line the way they did. That was stuff in the in-between measures that I wasn't really accustomed to.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that
you're
a song?
Wrong. No,
boom,
<I'm kidding>.
Done. Isn't that a song that Alex wrote? Isn't that one that he penned himself?
I don't know.
I thought maybe it was, but I'm not sure.
I could look it up.
I have it might that be power. An Alex creation.
I don't know.
I have another moment for you. A pivotal, important... Are you looking up things?
I'm looking up who wrote that song.
The pitter-patter of computer keys.
Well, you know, we might as well take advantage of this technology. I mean, I remember you used to say you were afraid of the internet.
Did I?
Yeah.
I
have it on one of our old podcasts. I said, why don't we just look it up? Actually, it was our first demo that we did from here.
I said, I'm afraid of the
internet.
We can
look it up, and you're like, I'm afraid to go on there.
Well, have no idea what I was talking about.
I believe it's in the first demo we did about the Beatles. And
all right, I'm
Beach
pulling
Boy
up another Drake. Song. I'm loading in another one because I have something to show you.
Yeah, that's a Life's in Peart song.
Yeah, it's Neil and Alex together. Yeah, yeah. It's the only one that they ever did that's them two. And obviously it stemmed off the dun, 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 and him playing that beat against it, which is just awesome. I'm going to load some in. Ready? Right. Hold on. Okay, I'm going to play something for you in the, off the same record, of course. All right.
Oh, it's Rush Light.
Yes. This changed my playing because that's a simple guitar riff, right? I mean, this is a hit song, actually, for them. This is a guitar riff, simple. Then you got D, listen. That, right there. The fact that he chose to do that little run underneath what was the simple second chord.
Yeah.
The fact that he chose that, he also does it every time under his singing. That changed the way I think about everything I play on. Because everybody else as a bass player, like, would have went, dan, they would have played the same thing. Right. Well, then he does do that part. Listen.
Yeah, but he's filling in the in-between measure.
Hey, listen. Oh, I can't play it. I forgot how to play it.
He does it again. That was off.
That was close. It was close. But that, listen. Play it regular and then... Yeah, I'm out of tune too. But the point is, that part, for the rest of my life, like, it's almost like a poison that gets in your system. Because when you play with musicians, like, let's say you're playing in a typical band or somebody's writing a song or they're playing a cover or whatever it is, the last thing they want to see the bass player do is take off and do that.
Yeah.
They want to see the bass player play the note that you're expecting. Like, listen, this and then just this. Play it again. That's what anybody else would have done.
Yeah.
Instead, he does that riff. And it's also like a falling, descending riff that makes you... It makes that whole part feel different. You know? Like, it's sort of like... Like, you just can't miss it. And to me, that... For I immediately started to play like that. I started to look for the little interesting move or run or riff or descending line or even ascending line just to give something simple a more textured feel. And it would drive most people crazy. Like, unless you're in Rush, most bands, that doesn't really fit, you know? I mean, there's a lot of good things I could say about this in terms of influential bass playing.
Sure.
Even his sound on here was it was influential, even though he never went back to it. He played with a boomy kind of non-distinct sound. Like every album after this one, he played with a lot of mid-range and crunchiness and distortion.
The trebly.
But this one, it's all bassy. It's the only record he played like that. Even the first record doesn't sound like that. But anyway, that's it for me. That moment, just him taking a simple D chord, you know, moving into the G chord, instead of doing what other bass players done, they might have used... Here, I'm going to bring it down for a second.
It just wouldn't have been fancy.
You know, dun, 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 dun. Well, a lot of bass players would have went... Dun, dun. They even would have maybe brought it up, but not him.
I don't think they would have done that. I don't think it would have been the nature to do any of those extra notes. It would have been boom, 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 boom. I think it would go up.
Or
it could
go G.
I think it would go up. Boom, boom. It seems like you're not going after the same note he's playing. He's just adding more to it.
Well,
boom, 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 boom. Wouldn't that be the natural kind of tone for that? I mean, that's what he's doing.
Well,
boom,
that's it.
Boom, 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 boom. But he's just going up and then falling back down, like you were saying.
Well, that's the note.
Yeah.
It's an octave up. Boom, boom, boom. That's what he's playing off of.
Yeah.
But the idea of that he throws something so much more...
That's
well, no,
the part.
It's boom. No, because here's the thing. I'm glad you brought that up. What makes the whole part interesting, to me anyway...
Is the
not
changing
that,
key?
No, it's not changing key. He's saying the D major. It's that he goes... Then when he does this part... Wait, I can only do it if I don't think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know where you're getting at.
It's that. It's the falling from these three notes.
Oh, okay.
They are, they're still in the major key, they're right in the scale, but they're, they start to make, they start to descend down the scale.
Oh, okay.
Of that,
see, I'm looking at
chord.
It more from the actual layout of the notes, where instead of it being boom, 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 he does that whole, like, I was thinking more of the front end of that as opposed to the falling down back.
No, it's
end
that
it.
Whole end part. Okay. It's, and it's when he hits, which is, you're not going to make any sense to you, but when he gets to the C note, it's that one.
Yeah.
So, and it's that one, and then moving to the B note. They are the ones that are leaving the root. Where? And a bass player plays on the tonic. The bass player plays, your bass player, if you're playing a D, the bass player typically stays on the D. And in traditional type of strong roots music, the bass player tends to stay on a tonic. So if the guitar player moves up from
is
the
that
D,
what Tom Hamilton would do?
Well, Tom Hamilton does a lot of actually really scary, interesting stuff that I didn't realize he was doing when I was younger. But like AC/DC, like just to make it simple. You know, AC/DC, if you're on the D, you ride that and you hold that D so that if the guitar player wants to move to G or A, that's fine. If you stay on that D, you give the whole song a stability. And that's what always people would expect out of you as a bass player, that stability.
Sure.
So if the it's like an AC like a Judas Priest kind of stability, you hit up that E and let the guitars move, and even if you are where they move, if you stay on that, the more you stay on that tonic, you're gonna the more stable
all
the
right
song sounds.
Where does
so with okay Rush with the Fly By Night, first chord is D, dun, dun. Second chord I think he just throws a G note over the D. It's a way, I mean, I'm not that good technically with a guitar to tell you, but he's just taking the D and adding the G note to it. So it's dun, 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 dun.
Do it
know
on there. Why are you
well, because
it?
I'm doing it, it's a bass. I can't show you the guitar.
Oh, okay.
But you know that second chord. You know how it sounds. It implies a G.
Okay.
And instead of staying in the D, which would be the tonic, or moving to the G.
Yeah.
Which
he
actually
moves to
changes
a C?
Things.
Is that how
no,
it works?
No, and instead of even what some bass players do to be interesting, they move up an octave.
Okay.
So even though it's still a D, at least it sounds
it's an
different.
Octave higher.
What Getty's doing is going up to that D and then falling down.
Oh, okay.
It's that. That falling sound sounds like that's Getty wrapped up in a nutshell.
Is that
he lived on that.
Is that the C and stuff you speak of, the falling part?
Yeah,
what
it's like
notes
he has
are going
the C
through
note
there?
Because
I don't know
B
notes
note
by letters.
Right.
I only know
the
sound. I'm a drummer.
And he did that, you know, just that kind of feel moving around off a chord. So I'm just trying not to make it too ridiculously boring, you know. But the idea is that not only is it weird because he does it and it takes it breaks up the stability of the song.
Yeah.
Suddenly it starts to sound interesting, and you already have Neil moving all over the place. You know he's not going to be.
I was going to say that's about as straight as he plays.
Right.
Back then.
Well, but I'm saying like you know the thing in Rush is they move around.
Yeah.
Bass and drums move around, and then on top of it he sings, which is another thing.
But you've actually
you're not gonna
noted
do
that he doesn't do that when he sings on All the World's a Stage. He plays it straight.
No, not
during
that
the vote
song.
Yeah, All the World's a Stage on Fly By Night. He doesn't do the.
He does
do
that.
No, he doesn't.
That song. He
I bet
does
you he doesn't. On
yeah
Fly By Night, on All the World's a Stage, he does the bloom until the verses start, and then he just goes boom, 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 doodle. Because you
I
were the
would
one
be
that
surprised
pointed me
if he did.
You
that
pointed that out to
because
me
because his
kid
old. You know, the, you know Rush's M.O.
Play it. You got it?
All right, I'll get it.
Throw it in there.
I will. But before we do it, real quick, you know Rush's M.O. It's to do live what they do in the studio, regardless of how difficult it is.
I know. That's why I think it's worth noting if that's true. So I think you should pull it up so we can
yeah, I'd be
that
really surprised if that's true. I'll
pull that puppy
but
up.
But anyway, that little moment, and I'll play it, but that moment to me, and of course that was an early moment. I was
that
15.
You're
and
welcome,
I was just
by
starting
the way
to play
you're
bass
welcome, by the way.
You brought me Rush. Thank you. You did bring me Rush. I do owe you that.
I completely changed your life.
You, I actually owe you that. Because
without
if
me,
you didn't play Rush, I wouldn't have.
You'd be playing Tom Hamilton riff forever.
But I'll tell you what, don't mock Tom Hamilton.
Because he
does things that I don't even understand his thinking. Like if you listen to Uncle Salty.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what chord he's implying there.
I could talk for a while on the effect Joey Kramer had on me as well. I completely forgot to prepare for that. I don't know why I skipped
and even,
it.
But. Well, I don't know if I can play that right now, but you know the that's pretty hard to play. I mean, that's no simple bass player's riff right
yeah.
there.
I think we should pull up that All the World's a Stage thing. I want to find that out.
Sounds good. Let's plug that in.
Plug it in.
Okay, so I loaded in what you asked me to.
Okay.
It's probably going to be really loud or something.
I don't want that concept to get lost on this show.
It's a team that's called...
Hold it up.
Hold it up. I don't know if I can.
All right, leave it on. But the fact that profound statement I just made, that for 30 years we've been doing this.
sounds like a disease.
Yeah. Since the time...
Wait, I can hear this. All right, did it in the low key, but he did.
All right, let's let it. Let's let him do it.
Oh, he did a weak version of it.
He does. Listen.
I guess he's doing it, but he's doing it differently.
Yeah.
I can tell you what he's doing, which I find really interesting. I'll wait till he gets through this. Weevil has discovered the acoustic guitar, which you're going to hear a lot about when this song stops.
Whoa. Wow!
You hear how he does it there?
Yeah, yeah.
Listen to the difference when he sings it. There is a difference.
Well,
it's close. It's close.
I might have been pretty wrong. Sometimes he hangs the note.
Yeah, exactly.
He misses the one note.
It's funny you said that, because it's exactly it.
He vanilla iced it.
When he does it normal, the right way would be... Anyway, I'm forgetting the part. But when you're right. He's letting it match the vocals, so
yeah,
it's a little easier to conceive.
He lets that one note hang.
Yeah, that he goes...
Yep, he skips the one little bloop.
Yeah, just to make it... Which, you know, you kind of have to give somewhere, because if you're singing it, it's hard to keep doing that. Great sound of the Rickenbacker.
I don't like the studio version of the song. I haven't been able to listen to
really?
It for years. I like this version.
It. Well, listen to the sound of the bass for one.
Wait, you know, here comes Neil.
Guitar is so sloppy. It's great. He's never sloppy.
I just can't be too loud.
Uh-huh, now they go to their Skinnered impression.
All right. I want to display something for our folk out there. Beaner right taught ahead. Me this
Uh-oh,
about
I'll
30
turn it all
years
the way
ago.
Down.
You taught me this on because I have very limited guitar aptitude.
And, let's see
and,
what you
and
got.
You taught me this.
This,
you know what? I'm just gonna say hi to your cousin Eric right now with.
Dearly departed. Oh man, Contagion! Right? That was like the first song I ever learned.
You taught me that.
And I should know the rest of that song, like the cool bass line and stuff. Yeah, exactly. I don't know it. You know, I didn't know the song when I learned it.
No,
I'd never heard it. I just saw my cousin Bob and Eric playing it.
I think it took about 10, 20 years before I'd actually ever heard it.
He's like, oh, that's that song.
But I could play that one riff because it's bar chords. And that, and of course the...
Is that MASH? It's really poor. I'm not going to sit here and listen to you play MASH. Only because we have people listening throughout the world.
I just played it.
Yeah, just do it out. I know.
Wait a minute.
You're killing off the audience with this. Yeah, that's heavy. It's wrong.
That's how you learn to play bass.
I know, and it was wrong. Now, there's a good example. There's a song where the bass job is to just drive that G.
Yeah.
Well, that whole dun, 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 he just drives that G, which gives the song stability, which, you know, Rush didn't know anything about that, didn't care. All right, that's it. You're going into Lolly Land. I see you. You're just drifting because you have a guitar now. All right, so that was a moment. That was a moment, and it was also a moment where you were wrong.
Yeah, I was wrong.
No, you weren't entirely wrong.
I was half
because
wrong.
You said that he changed it, and he did change it.
All right, can we do my Iron Maiden song now?
Okay, we can do an Iron Maiden song. Yes, we can. So, should I load that in?
Yeah.
You're completely lost in guitar land
yeah.
now.
All right, I'll put it down.
All right. Okay, I loaded in the next... selection.
This reminds me of another factor I meant to bring up before about bass, but we'll get to that in a little bit. And then you'll get to pick your bass up again. But this drummer, I stole so much from this guy. And Clive, I thought I'd be such a pure clone, as I've said in the past. But the way this guy plays.
Clive Burr.
Yeah. I'll point it out when it comes up. But it's the heavy use of floor tom, the way he does, to compensate for not having double bass.
There's also a raw sloppiness that he has that I love.
The looseness, the drunk style, as we like to call it.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, he's also overreaching. You know what I mean? He's always reaching for a little bit beyond what he's technically
maybe.
Capable of.
I don't know. I think he's right where he wants to be.
Because his tempo moves around.
Yeah, his tempo was... I'm sure the smack didn't help either.
Probably had something to do with it.
But, like, the stuff he does here, there's a particular fill that really always stayed with me.
It was so fast for me at the time.
And that heavy foot. It's got that really heavy foot. That solid... deep dish snare sound. I don't like those tennis ball-y sound ones, the pongy ones.
This is even though Neil had that at times.
And he does, yes. But this. All this. Floor tom, bass drum. And then this. That shuffle.
And him. He and Steve Harris are locked.
Yeah.
The bass and the drums are just locked.
Wait,
in those.
I love a little variation right here coming up. Coming up. Not there.
That's almost Rush-esque.
No, not that one. It's this one. That one.
The little play on the toms?
Yeah. But I love that. Ooh. I do so much of that. Bass drums going with the snare roll. Just,
you know,
it's just solid. It's on the numbers solid.
I can't say that Steve Harris, as a bass player, changed my playing.
Well,
but he did open a door.
That's a question I have for you, because you used to always make a particular criticism about every picture. It looks like he's holding the same chord. Explain that to me. How is it? Because I hear him all over the place. Now, is that because he's all over the four strings independently of each other while he's holding that one chord? Because you got bass notes and bass chords.
I'm not sure if I know what you're talking about, but I can tell you this, and maybe it's what you're saying. But all Iron Maiden is moving between.
Yeah. And that's why all the pictures look like he's holding the fret the same way.
Because he's always staying on the root note.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he's a...
It looks like he has his fingers are always just across the whole neck.
Right, because always it's that position. He only holds one position on the bass, and that's like a bar chord type of position.
Now, is that because he's doing a lot of the legwork with the plucking hand?
Right, like most of his playing is with this right hand.
As to where, like, Chris Squire, it's the fret hand that gets all those different notes.
Watch, I can't show the listener, but if you look at my fingers right now, the way they're going to look when I show you this, you can see a different shape here.
Yeah.
The shapes are made from your position.
Your fret hand.
Okay, unfortunately, I just cut us off on accident, as you know. What we were just talking about, and about, I don't know, another 5 minutes got aced. So I'm going to pick it up just so you know what I was talking about, just so the listener knows what I was talking about.
Yeah, the listener knows what I learned.
Yes, you had a nice aha moment, and we missed it.
Yeah, basically just...
Well, I left off talking to you about the difference between Steve Harris moving around with his fist.
Yeah.
You know, in these bar
with
chord
the fret
positions
hand.
And doing everything here
with
his right hand. You know, doing all his articulations and his speed and his not messing around with different notes as much as messing around with different hits.
Yeah.
Strokes. And then I showed you the difference by using this four finger position, where if I go up chromatically, for instance, well, it wasn't totally chromatically, but it stayed within the four frets. And if you can play out of a position like that, which is what I said to you before, if I play Vital Signs by Rush.
Yeah, he does all his walking with his fret hand.
Well, but he's staying in that four-finger position. So he's using the notes where they're available in this four-finger position, which is not something Steve Harris would do, because he probably wouldn't even use those different notes necessarily. But that's the difference. That kind of player I had mentioned, and the stuff that got cut off, the guy who plays for the tubes, he sounds like a session player or is a session player, but he does some amazing things where he'll dance around three, four different chords within this one position without leaving this, you know, or if I played this, I can't think of it right now. But if you listen to old Michael Jackson, I mean old ABC 123 yeah. and Stop the Love and all that stuff, that bass player has got to be a session player or just a real good player.
Well, back then, yeah. I mean,
that player is playing in that.
That's Motown, dude.
But that's a player who's playing in that one position and dancing around a lot to get all the different yeah. notes that he wants. Rather than, like I said, Steve Harris is moving his fists up and down the neck and yeah. staying in
well,
the
well, that was
one,
the crust
five,
of it. The difference
octave.
In my comprehension of it, the difference is you got bass players that do their diversity in the fret hand end of the bass, as to where Steve Harris is more inclined to be on the pluck end of it.
Totally. Yeah. I mean,
that was the point we were reaching, and
he's living over
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, my fist needs to move so it can sound different. Okay.
For him, it's my hand is here, and I have four strings to work with down here.
Exactly.
As opposed to the other way around, it's like Getty's got, I've got four strings down here and four strings up here to run around on.
Right. It's
kind
of like
a different mindset.
It is totally a different mindset. And, you know, they kind of teach Hernia. You basic lessons of, you know, finger position. You can use a few different positions around the neck to
sure.
get what you want. But Steve Harris, you could tell by his thinking that he's not interested in finger position. He's
yeah.
interested in moving around.
Well, it's easier to do those rifle poses yeah. on the monitor
exactly.
if you don't have to move.
That's another thing, too.
If one of your hands doesn't have to move so much.
Right. I mean, another thing, too, is he plays pretty low down for somebody who's doing as much as he is. Like,
yeah.
in other words, his guitar is hanging down
yeah,
below
he plays
his
low.
Hip. And that's not easy to do. Another guy who does that to the hilt is the guy who plays Metallica now, who is from Suicidal
yeah,
Tendencies.
Trulio.
What's his name? Yeah. I mean, he's playing lower than I've ever seen anyone play, and he's not a simple bass player.
No, he's
like,
a great bass player.
He's a great bass player.
I just still won't forgive him for re-recording the Ozzy records for Sharon, but I'm digressing.
Okay. I think that was its own show. But anyway, that point of Steve Harris, he wasn't an eye-opener to me in terms of he didn't change how I played. In fact, what I looked at Steve Harris is, truth is, I really kind of looked at him as he played wrong. Like,
yeah.
he played technically incorrectly.
He used to say
and
that
I didn't
about
want
Getty,
to learn
too.
That. Well, Getty did, too, which was an eye-opener for me. Like, yeah. Steve Harris looked to me like just somebody untrained who just happened to be very fast, you know?
Yeah.
Very, very precise and great attack. I mean,
yeah.
he hits when he hits, you know, like...
Well, he's on key and stuff. He's good that way. You know.
Like, that Rothschild is
yeah.
so powerful. But... Getty, who plays sort of like, I once, you know, saw a friend, a guy we knew. I don't know if you knew Russ Bonaguerra.
No, of course I know.
From Myth. Yeah. But he played over the bridge pickup in a very precise way.
Yeah.
Like in articulating every note. And he looked to me like a trained player. Not even sure if he was or wasn't. But he's a very good player, and he played like a trained player. And that made me think, yeah, I'd rather go in that direction. I'd rather be more of a trained player. And then I saw Getty play with unorthodox playing over this pickup,
yeah.
over the one closer to the neck, the bass pickup, and very, instead of what you can't see, the listener can't see, but instead of having like the proper techniques with your finger and where your thumb sits,
yeah.
his thumb is just hanging out and he's pulling it like this. The only other person I've seen do that is his idol, one of his idols, Jack Bruce.
Oh, okay.
Who plays like this.
Not Entwistle? Really?
Entwistle does it too.
Okay, because I
know
he's a
big fan
of Entwistle.
But the thumb hand where it's positioned is different. The way Getty does it, I've never seen anybody else do it except for Jack Bruce. The way his hand is
Yeah, well, they're big cream fans.
Very unorthodox. It's like his hand is floating. And Getty's just hammering. And you're right. Entwistle
yeah.
did it too. Hammering.
Yeah.
Which is another big no-no in the studio, by the way. When you're slamming this... The engineer, that's all they hear.
They're
like,
nuts.
Why are you doing that? Don't do it.
Don't do that anymore.
Because I remember being in a studio and getting that, like, why are you slamming? You know, you're killing me.
You know what I never liked about Entwistle? The way his pluck hand works. It just seems like he's...
Like this?
Yeah.
This raking
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, I don't
kinda
like that.
He does this.
I never liked that.
Like, he uses, like, all the fingers. And of course, if you listen to, like, My Generation, his big moment in My Generation, that's cool, but I don't get much from
it. He never really impressed me. I mean, he does his job. He holds it down.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's a revered figure in the scene and all, but yeah. He's not one of those bass players that, as a drummer, like Chris Squire blows my mind, Geddy Lee blows my mind. You know, I'm always impressed with Steve Harris.
Yeah, I am impressed with Steve Harris, by the way. Don't get me wrong. I just don't think he's technically somebody to learn from, you know?
And now I'm even getting, as I get older, I get even more appreciation for what Lemmy from Motorhead does, which were, you know, a big topic last night. But I'm not even going to hit you with that right now.
Or so you wanted me to load in something.
No. I thought we were. You were going to show me
something.
One more thing.
I forgot. I'm showing you one more thing. One more moment.
And then
that
we're gonna open
plane.
Up the can of. Yeah.
Get into the can of girls, as you called it.
Yeah.
All right. Hold on. Okay. This should start in a second. And I know I could take Rush and Getty riffs and go on, but this is it. Right there.
I remember when this had the effect on you that you're going to explain. See, when I got my drums, I went out of my way to learn this next. Because that was that... The swish hi-hat, the open, you know, every other measure of hi-hat, every other beat. I don't know how to properly coin that phrase.
Okay, that
was when you learned slap.
Well, it isn't slap. He didn't slap.
But it was pseudo slap, and that was
funk.
I think that was your first.
They once commented, like, you know, we're white guys playing funk, you know,
yeah.
Like they're so not funky. But there's also, I can't even explain that. I know it's a funk. It's obvious, you know. It's
a run it funk.
I'm not playing it in time, but that whole feel. That was the first time I heard him play with this kind of feel, which he returned to in
Show Don't Tell.
Show Don't Tell. Right, and he also turned to it in Red Barchetta. Like, it's just playing. I know I played that wrong, but this playing off this.
Yeah.
Open note, which in this case is the A, which we pretty much always uses, and then dancing around here with the open A. So it's that. That whole choppy open A dancing off the other notes feel, I mean, that just changed. That whole thing just went, whoa, what was that? You know, like I always kind of always.
See, for me, it was the drum beat, you know. It was learning to play that drum beat. It was a tough one to get
he
down.
He still does
time.
That in a way that I can't, you know, do. There's a way that he's really good at that typical, that moving from the open note to the closed note, this.
And
like I can't even quite show you.
And to add to your funk remark, you have the Live Different Stages?
No.
The live album?
I probably have it.
Because it comes with
the extra
disc. That's the Farewell to Kings tour
from the
Hammersmith Odeon in London, where they do that part. He says, he says over the mic, you know, make it funky.
Yeah. It's totally them being funky. And it's...
bunch of goofballs.
And, you know, like, you could go and find a lot of great funk... but nobody influenced me the way that did because the attack and the lock between him and Neil on them is and there's the distortion. It almost is like
boom. I love the slide. The
slide. And this too, you'll know this. Yeah, exactly. Like that's that same them, Getty and Neil locking in with that distorted kind of sound. Like it's tight and yet
so
it's distorted
different
at the same time
from anything we were listening to at the time.
Yeah,
the Aerosmith, Kiss, Black Sabbath.
There was no locking
like
of the
that.
Drummer and the bass player.
Yes.
So that moment made me just, you know, I mean, I wanted to do that to this day, especially like I'm out of practice a bit now. I'm not going to pull that off. But like, I always want to. That it changes your thinking. Like, I just, when I pick up the bass, I want to just take off and do that, you know? And then, so then that all came from, pretty much started with that little riff. And that's my little thing, right?
That's
there.
Your little thing.
All so right. You have, you want to go into the can of girls. I don't know.
If we do the can of, I mean, that's, I think that's a big discussion.
It's a big, it's big a, cookie to chew.
It's a rather personal.
Whatever that means.
Big cookie to chew. It's a very personal reflection.
Well, we probably could dip into it with our time allowance today, but we could try dipping into it and see where it goes.
I mean, these are just some of the things I've been thinking about, but it's probably better that we hold off because there's a lot of facets to my psyche.
You're not prepared to be psychoanalyzed just right now in 5-10 minutes?
I think we've covered a lot of ground as it is. It'll be a good topic for another show because there's a tremendous amount of female music influence on me that we can get to.
A good next show.
Yes, next show here on The Great Debate. Thanks for coming.
Bye.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Bye. Au revoir.
Aloha. Wait for it. See you next show.